welcome to Show Me Mike, the podcast where I talk to other podcasters about their podcast. You can find it online at goodstuff.fm/SMYM for Show Me Your Mic, or on Twitter at SMYM_FM, and of course in iTunes, where I would love and appreciate a review or a rating if you feel like throwing that in there. I'm your host, Chris Enns, and for this episode, I've got Adam Martin on the show from the Makers of Sport podcast, where he talks with creative types involved in sports. It's a great premise for a show and allows him to talk with some really interesting people. You can check it out at makersofsport.com. My thanks to Campaign Monitor for once again sponsoring this episode of Show Me Your Mic. More about them a little later on in the show. Now here's my conversation with Adam Martin. Your podcast is Makers of Sport, makersofsport.com. The premise, as I read it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is the intersection. Well, I'm just going to read your bio. I'm not going to. I won't pretend like I'm not looking right at your website right now. The intersection of sports, design, and creativity, which I just think is an awesome premise and sort of niche thing or whatever. I kind of hate using the word niche, but I mean, it is what it is. But there's plenty of design podcasts, there's plenty of web design podcasts, but just going into like, okay, this one aspect of design as it relates to sport, and I would guess you have a connection with sport and that kind of thing we'll get into. But I love this, the premise. I love the episodes I listen to, and also just the design of your site for that matter too is a great look. It doesn't look like every other podcast site out there. So what's stepping back a little bit from just this particular podcast, what brought you into podcasting in the first place?
So, yeah, I mean, I started listening to podcasts probably when they first came out, I guess maybe around 2004, 2005, somewhere in that area. And I found like a design podcast. I can't even remember what the name of it is now, but I just thought I was very fascinated that I never was really a listener to talk radio. So it's kind of interesting that I somehow ended up falling in love with talking on the radio. But I listened to a design podcast, and then just over the years, especially in the last couple years, we've seen great shows come about, especially in design and also in comedy and some other industries, and just fell in love with it and never really thought that I would do it. Up until I started listening to a guy who is a hand letterer in San Antonio, Texas. His name is Sean McCabe, and his website is seanwes.com, SEANWES.com. And I started listening to his show, and he actually said something that really stuck out to me, and it was the only difference between myself and someone that doesn't have a podcast is that we're willing to put ourselves out there, put out things that are imperfect, and to iterate in public. And actually, at that time, Aaron Dowd, who you've had on your show, was on the show with Sean. So,
oh, nice.
little circle there.
Yeah.
So anyway, it kind of pushed me to start this thing. And also, I had just finished up reading Alexis Ohanian's book, the co-founder of Reddit, Without Their Permission. And big listener of like 5x5 and some of those type of networks, and just had just left a job as a creative director at a small web shop in Lexington, and decided to do something new and jumped right in without having a clue what I was doing. I thought I would just press record and we'll go. How hard can it be?
Yeah. That's awesome. So this is your first show with Makers of Sport is your first show?
Yeah, it is.
Nice.
And I wanted to get on a schedule, and I knew that was the one thing as far as just being a big listener of a lot of podcasts. I knew that a schedule is very important, and I knew how frustrating it was for me when I listened to shows and you just didn't know when the next one was coming out. And so I forced myself to I wasn't ready to commit to a show every week, just because I stay pretty busy on the services side, and decided to do every other week. I figured that would give me enough time to do interviews or to line up interviews, and it's been working out pretty well. And obviously, as you know, and everybody that probably listens to this show knows, it's a ton of work, and it only gets as deep as you want it to go. It just gets deeper and deeper.
Yeah, totally. Talk to me a bit about you mentioned the scheduling thing, and that's something I know that there's a bit of back and forth sometimes on, and I'm a subscriber and a believer in that maxim or whatever, that you need to, if whatever schedule you set forth, whether it's once a month, bi-weekly, weekly, you need to stick to that and keep the episodes coming, and obviously, you know, sicknesses and things aside, but just trying to stick to that, not just let it slide or whatever. And that's kind of the death of a podcast often. But from a listener's perspective, I'm just curious if you can sort of go back, and maybe this still happens too, is what is the drawback or the frustration that you feel when a show isn't out on the schedule, like when you, whatever, I don't know if it's like the talk show or Back to Work or something or whatever that you listen to and the episode isn't there. I'm of the mind, this has always been my pushback before I sort of really bought into the scheduling thing, is of the mind of, well, I'll just listen to something else and then that show will eventually appear. But I know that there is, I've seen it with this show too. When I'm consistent, it just, everything seems to go better, both my end and listener end. So how about you? What's your experience?
Yeah, it's basically exactly that as far as like going better. I mean, you know, the thing about listening to other shows is I never did know. There's a few shows that I know exactly what day they come out, but that's just because, you know, you've been listening for a while and you start to notice this pattern. But even if a show comes out, you know, maybe it's a monthly show, but it's one of those things where I notice when it takes a really long time, you know. So like say a show's monthly and then all of a sudden, you know, sometimes even the host will announce and say, yeah, we'll be out next month and, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden you just don't hear from them for three more months.
Yeah.
or there's no closure to like the ending of a show maybe.
Yeah.
There's been shows that I've listened to that just completely disappear. And you're just like, what happened to this thing?
Yeah.
So, but as far as the schedule is concerned, it helps me sort of, maybe subconsciously to, you know, this is something that, like many of us, we're trying to figure out how to make a little money from this. We're not necessarily doing it for the money directly. We're doing it for the love. But, you know, obviously in the back of our minds, we're trying to figure out how do we make money, be that through sponsorships or communities, paid communities and things like that. And for me, I because of that reason and because it's not something that I'm getting paid for, having that enforced schedule sort of makes me do this thing consistently without sort of slipping up and thinking, well, I'm actually doing this completely for free and spending a lot of time and not getting paid for it. So it just makes it become a priority, having that schedule and being public with the schedule and announcing that, hey, every other Monday you're going to have an episode for me. And then on Tuesday you're going to get my newsletter, which is going to be the main, a lot of times just the show notes. But sometimes when I find time, I try to write some articles and things too on the site. So I try to, the main thing is always going to be the podcast, but, you know, I obviously want to kind of drive some traffic as well. And I want to do long, maybe a little more long form or deeper dives on sports related, creative projects, be that in design or just from a technology perspective or fashion. I mean, I, you know, have written about shoes, sneakers and things like that. And I really want it to be high level because there are a lot of, and I'm kind of going on a tangent here, maybe into a little bit of more the mission of the podcast, but, there are a lot of networks or blogs out there and things where, the sports industry, especially with uniforms in pro and college sports, there's a lot of uniform sort of geek blogs, and they tend to be really subjective. And there's a lot of trolling that tends to happen. You know, it's that uniform sucks. You know, and it's like, well, why does it suck? And number one, we don't know the actual goals and initiatives and the reasoning behind it. And so, I wanted to kind of bring a professional level of discussion to these types of things. And an example of that is in episode 11, I interviewed a guy by the name of Adam Clement, and he is the team sports creative director at Under Armour. And so he's the the leader of the group that creates all of the uniforms for Under Armour. And they tend to do, a lot of brands are trying to sort of catch Nike because I don't know how familiar you are with University of Oregon football and their sort of innovative things that they do with uniforms. So Under Armour, a lot of brands are trying to catch Nike. And so Under Armour is really doing some neat stuff. But the thing is that it gets on these uniform blogs and it gets completely trashed and completely subjective. And you know, and like I said, everybody's like, that uniform sucks or whatever. And there might even be a subconscious allegiance to another team that no matter what that team does, it's going to suck to you, right?
Totally, that's what I was going to say.
So I wanted to bring people in and talk about a higher level, higher conceptual level from the conceptual side and from the branding and strategy side, and really get behind these projects and view them in a deeper way. And so something that Adam Clement actually said that stuck with me, and I try to put a quote, one of the better quotes that sort of speak to me at the beginning of each episode show notes. He said, my goal isn't to please the blogs and the internet audience. Our goal is to make everyone happy. Our goal isn't to make everyone happy. It's really to tell the story that school wants to tell. It's about those athletes. It's about that school at that time. And that's something that's really interesting to put that out there and have this guy who's the one behind the scenes creating these things and doing tons and tons of research and making these things highly conceptual, everything from the smallest symbolism in a line, you know, on the uniform that we think, oh, that's just a line, but actually it stands to represent something based on the design ethos. And I wanted to put that out there, you know, because that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. They look at it and they're like, well, I don't like that color. I don't like the look of that collar or whatever. And I'm not a huge uniform nerd myself. I'm just speaking to one particular episode, but that's sort of the reason why I did this. And I have a passion for sport and especially, the intersection of sport and culture and really how sport influences culture, specifically creative culture. If we think about street brands, and fashion, how sport influences that, you know, especially basketball. Basketball tends to really influence culture in a way, especially with sneakers and all the way up. So,
yeah, that was a good tangent.
But
that's, that's what I think is so interesting and would be hard to be objective. Like I think somewhere I saw, I forget which team you're partial to or teams that you're partial to, obviously in your own sporting life and interests or whatever. And it's hard to remain a bit unbiased in discussions, especially if it's a, you know, sort of a cross town or cross city or whatever rival,
right.
That kind of stuff. But yeah, the design and stuff. And it's, I think someone can appreciate that who has worked in a creative avenue of any sort where people, people who aren't as interested in the deeper details of it, even say podcasting, for example, might make fun of or not find anything like that as interesting. But to those who do, it's fun to sort of get into the nitty gritty of details of why that line is that way or why the fader is turned to 7 instead of 8 or whatever little minutia of the details of it is about. So how have you, I would guess that the folks, like as far as finding folks to chat with and interview, these aren't a lot of folks who necessarily get a lot of press, maybe outside of like, again, maybe magazine articles that sort of go a little bit deeper inside some of the design processes and stuff like this. But has it been hard to sort of get people to come on podcasts and convince them that this is a worthwhile, you know, hour, whatever of their time and the promotional effort that it might bring for them and all that kind of stuff?
It hasn't been too tough. I was very fortunate in that when I started my career, I came from a sports marketing company, which was pretty well known. And so I sort of knew some of the people in this niche.
Right.
And so I crossed paths with a guy years ago who I admired that does a lot of sports branding work from the logo side. And he tends to cross over into mainstream a little bit because he's a very talented illustrator. And people, you know, he's got like a lot of Dribbble followers and that type of thing. And he became a friend of mine and even someone that I would consider maybe a mentor. And I actually was part of a creative organization in Lexington, Kentucky, and had got him to come speak before. And so when I started the show, he was one of the first names that I reached out to, and he was all about doing it. So that sort of immediately gave it a little bit of credibility.
Right.
In my first interview, I interviewed a friend of mine who's a very talented photographer. He was a graphic designer turned photographer, and he does a lot of photo compositing and really talented guy. And I interviewed him first because I wanted to interview someone that, you know, maybe wasn't on the level of like a creative director at Nike or something like that, you know, where if I messed up, you know, it's,
yeah,
it wouldn't be as embarrassing. So since I knew him and obviously, you know, how when you interview people that you already know a lot about, it just makes it so much easier and a lot less scripted. So I interviewed him first and then moved into the second guy, which is Joe Bosak. That's the guy I was referring to. And then the rest were sort of people that I was connected to through Twitter. And then started just really moving into like LinkedIn and finding people, you right. know, and just like, what's your title, searching titles at different brands and things like that. And reaching out to them. And, you know, if somebody would follow me follow the podcast Twitter account, for example, episode 6, Jose Lopez, he's the creative director of the Houston Rockets. In the NBA, and he followed the Twitter account, and I just sent him a DM and was like, "Hey, you want to come aboard the show?" And he was like, "Yeah, let's do it." One of my most interesting interviews. Now I do get people that don't respond, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't had anybody come out directly and turn me down, but I have had a lot of people not respond.
Yeah, it gets lost in the PR somewhere or something.
Yeah. And that's why with the Under Armour one, I was so blown away. They were very, very receptive of this. And you know, I reached out. I had a mutual connection with Adam on LinkedIn. And I asked the guy, I was like, can you introduce me to him? And he introduced me. I, you know, sent him the pitch of coming on the show. He was like, yeah, absolutely. Sounds interesting. He's like, let me run it through our PR department. CC'd the girl. She was very receptive. Sent me, you know, PR sanctioned images and things like that that I can include on the site. And it was great. And honestly, you know, things like that, from a branding perspective, it makes me want to support them. Honestly. I mean, you know, I, for many years I've been a sort of a Nike brand loyalist, I guess. But something like that, you know, and as hard as it is to get somebody to come on from Nike and having Under Armour be fully receptive, it's like, hey, you know, I'm gonna start buying as much Under Armour stuff as I can now. I'm going to make a conscious decision there.
Totally. Well, that's I guess you'll come across this as more, you know, companies that get that talking to what may perceive to be like, you're not Time Magazine, obviously, or whatever. And so talking to the quote unquote little guy still helps get the word out to a lot of people who might not otherwise hear or understand the ethos of their brand or their marketing message or whatever. And hopefully, you know, folks like you doing things like what you do will encounter that a little more, and it becomes a little easier to have folks like that on. Cause yeah, they're just people too. Like whether they work top level Nike or just make t-shirts down in the local t-shirt shop for the high school volleyball team or whatever.
Right.
You know, they're all struggling with similar issues and stuff and have similar conversations and stuff. It's just, they might have a couple extra zeros after their budget.
Yeah, no doubt.
Which is, it's true. And that's where I think lots of podcasters maybe feel like whatever their focus is. I know I felt the same way when I started this show of like, well, I know a couple people and they'll probably come on, but there's no way I'm going to get a, whoever it was at the time, like, you know, Dan Benjamin or somebody that was, you know, up there in my mind. But then you start emailing them, and they're like, sure, I'd love to come on. I want to, any chance I get to promote my thing, I'll happily do it, you know, given the time and all that kind of stuff. So more often than not, they'll say yes to what you're doing, as long as you present yourself in somewhat of a professional, you know, capacity. It's any tips, I guess, on what, when you're sending, you mentioned the pitch that you send out, you know, when you're pitching these folks, what kind of stuff are you including, details or whatever are you sending to them to sort of entice them to come on?
Yeah. So I obviously sent them, you know, my sort of little tagline for the show, conversations at the intersection of sports design and creativity. And then I'll usually include some of the more well-known interviews or brands, you know, people that work for specific brands, to kind of immediately give it a little credibility, you know, that I'm not interviewing somebody that works at maybe a local high school, and not to undermine that at all. But, you know, the reality is, that's just not going to get a whole lot of people to listen, you know? And the thing is, a lot of people that follow that are in this sort of demographic look up to a lot of these people, and their thing is they want to know, how do you get to that level? you know?
Yeah.
And so I'll send that. And then, you know, maybe sometimes I'll send an article that I've written, which there aren't very many, unfortunately. But, you know, I'll show them that this is not about geeking out about, you know, the latest sneaker or talking about the colors or things like that. We're going to talk on a higher level. And to be quite honest, I don't know much about interviewing. I mean, like I said, I just jumped right into this, but I've started to learn just from listening. And now, you know, I'm starting to hear podcasts and be like, well, that's not a good interview at all. Like, that person didn't do the research. And, you know, you're starting to see stuff like that. And so I sort of let them know that, you know, if you come on the show, you're going to be framed in a way that if you can answer the questions and have this conversation, you're going to be framed in a way that's going to make you look and sound extremely smart and intelligent, which you are, because that's the reason that I asked you to come aboard. We're not going to talk about very minute things like, why did you choose that color or whatever. We're going to talk about higher level strategic things and, you know, the brand side of things and how do you handle, you know, a question that I actually sort of led Adam Clement, the Under Armour guy, into this question without actually having to directly ask it, because I was sort of testing whether he would answer it or not. And right. So I there was a few years back, Under Armour had designed these uniforms for the University of South Carolina, which were for the Wounded Warrior Project. And kind of had like a camouflage, like a military camo look. They were really one of the first people to kind of do that. And the whole reason was behind it was because something about the proceeds were going to the Wounded Warrior Project and this type of thing. But anyway, so the numbers were not easily readable from the field. There's some of these small things people don't think about, like why did they choose that or whatever. Did you actually go up in the top of the stands and view down at a prototype to see that you can actually see that number? And right. So the way the light hit this thing, it was like he knew right away on the field, like, this is not going to work. And I remember that being sort of a debacle, I guess, on a lot of the sports sites like the ESPNs and SB Nations and things like that, about how they ended up having to change their uniforms. And so I sort of led him into that question, asking him what type of research they do. Like, are you doing extensive research and actually going, you know, like I mentioned before, up into the stands and looking at these things on prototypes and things like that? And he jumped right in and answered it. And it was a beautiful moment too, because it, you know, that humanizes him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is a mistake that he acknowledged that he made in his career. And he talks about how he got over it. And he talks about how do you deal with criticism when you are a sports branding person and you recreate an identity that, you know, it's almost tribal to an extent. You know, like, people aren't getting tattoos. This is kind of the running joke on the show. People aren't getting tattoos of like Pepsi, right? Like, people are getting tattoos of their favorite hockey team, you know, yeah. And they're very passionate about it. And so when you redesign the identity of something like that, there are a lot of stakeholders involved, everything from the front office management, maybe alumni if it's a college. And then, of course, you have the most vocal, which are the fans on social media. You know, you redesign the identity of the hockey team of, you know, a guy who's been going to games with his dad for, you know, X number of years, you know. And that's the beautiful thing about sports. I'm actually more passionate about that side about sports than a lot of times even the sport itself, because there's so many great stories behind it. And everybody has a connection with, you know, like I said, going to a game with their dad for many years. And it's so personal to them. You know, maybe their father passed away a couple years ago or whatever, and that's their memory. They can remember going to those games, and they can remember when they were a kid and what things looked like and that type of thing. And I think that's why people care so much about it. So being able to have conversations about that is fascinating.
Yeah. And that's what I know, like, sport to me is the I think it was on maybe the talk show, John Gruber often talks about baseball in there, if you listen to that show. But and often he said, like, there's kind of like two folks: either you're like stats nerd junkie on the sports stuff, which I get a little bit of, but I'm like, I can't stand watching baseball, but I love the story of baseball and the mythology of baseball and that kind of stuff, just like you're saying. And so, and it's easy to get cynical in, like, bringing it back to what you're talking about with the design of a uniform or a logo for a team, where it feels more like, well, they just want, it's a money grab and they want, you know, just another, they're putting on another uniform. We had the same thing up here in the Canadian Football League recently with, I was just trying to Google if it was Under Armour that did them or not, but all the teams got a third uniform that was like a little more edgy, and there's a bit of the cynical kind of look of like, well, they're trying to sell a few more uniforms, make a couple bucks.
Right.
And that angle on it, and I'm sure there is that involved in some of this too, but for the folks involved in the design and stuff, obviously that's not what they're after necessarily. It's the, like, I appreciate the idea of wanting to tell that story. I was thinking, you don't see a lot of people getting tattoos of podcasts, I guess, yet.
Yeah.
Maybe a t-shirt.
Maybe if I get a million listeners, I'll get a tattoo of the Makers of Sport logo. Exactly. Which we all know is not going to happen.
Oh, you never know. Don't sell yourself short. But yeah, it's a fun thing, and it's I love, and it sounds like it's similar to what you do. Like, I love the conversations you get to have with folks who you other, like, there'd be no good excuse for you to just call up. I'm just looking at your last episode is John Trotter, who I don't know myself who that is, but I'm guessing there probably wouldn't be a great reason where you could just call him up and chat with him for an hour or whatever about sports stuff and design, and you know, you wouldn't take your call on that. But you're on a podcast, and it's kind of like a great little avenue. Never mind everything else that you get to do as a result of this, but a great reason just to have a conversation with someone of a peer or a like-minded folk. So,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, honestly, for my day job is, you know, I'm a freelance designer and, you know, full time. And, you know, it's all about relationships. You know, business is all about relationships. And so, you know, I get to have these conversations with people, and even though I'm not at this time, you know, and I got like a sponsorship link on my website, and honestly, I haven't even decided if I'm going to take sponsorships yet. I've had a couple inquiries, but I want to make sure. I just, you know, it's tough, you know, and I know you've had this conversation on here before about, you know, I want to make sure that it's something that I use and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, the thing is that it still is a little bit of, I guess the right word would be maybe inbound marketing for me, because I get to have these conversations with people, and you know, the thing is if part of branding and part of design, and I feel like part of being a good designer is having an ability to ask questions, and not just ask questions, but ask the right questions. Like, how can you ask the right questions to really get to the meat of what you need to know, you know, like to get behind that sort of layer that maybe the business is not talking about, or maybe they just don't understand or know that that's their actual problem. And so this is helping me, one, to get better at asking questions. You know, deeper questions. Mm-hmm. and also listening. I mean, listening, you know, a lot of us that podcast, we like to talk, right? and so, you know, it helps me to learn to actually sit back and let me listen and let me process what these people are saying instead of just going down a list of questions. And maybe they already answered that, you know?
Yeah.
And I've run into situations where, you know, they've answered that, and I might actually get kind of stuck, you know, and I'll have to kind of go back and edit that part out.
Yeah. Oh, totally. But, and that's, yeah, especially, I know I'm doing it to you right now as you're my guest and I'm interrupting and talking over you, but I've with this show, 56 episodes in now, you get a little more comfortable with stuff, but still, it took me a while to sort of throw out a bit of the script, because I always wanted to just make sure I got certain things asked and certain things discussed, and would kind of like disregard. I find myself not listening to the response just to make sure I remember the next question or figure out how I was going to ask it or whatever. And these days now with this show, especially, I've more or less thrown it out, and just, I have a couple notes that I do, but because I mean, I wouldn't necessarily know where you're going to go with the conversation, obviously, when we talk, and I have a general idea of where I'd like to go and certain things. But if I try to stick to that script too much, I'm going to miss anything extra interesting, just like we were talking about stories and stuff that might come out, just because I'm stuck on going, okay, now number five is newsletter. Okay, right. Talk to you about newsletter or whatever.
You're reading ahead. You know, you're like on the guest is answering question three and you're like looking up like question seven, like let me, you know.
Yeah. Totally. And that's, I'll do a cheesy segue to sponsorship just because we need to stop for a sponsor. But I know that's an issue we've discussed here at Good Stuff. As the network grows and we do take on different sponsors and looking at different avenues for sponsorship for the different shows, we try and take the model of site-wide in general. I mean, there's exceptions always, but in general, a site-wide sponsor. And so then you definitely have come up against the issue of, as much as the, it's like, say, Adam and Tim and myself, who are the founders, have used, say, Campaign Monitor, not all the guest hosts or the hosts haven't on other shows, and but they're still going to do the sponsor read and how do we sort of handle all that. And everybody's been doing great on that. But it does kind of as we grow, there's going to be times where some of us aren't going to be users of a certain brand or product or service or whatever, and yet still do a sponsor read. And we've just been, it's just funny because we were just talking about that the other day and how to sort of help hosts and ourselves sort of figure that out and speak highly of a thing that maybe isn't something that you're either able to use or don't use right now. And how do you speak with integrity about that if it's something that, and obviously we give our, this is a bit of a rant here, I guess, but we give our give our hosts a bit of freedom to say, no, I mean, we wouldn't take anything on that was against anything that we believed in, obviously, but also if it's like someone just really had a bad experience at sponsor A, well, we're not going to force them to use them and we'll work something out. But anyway.
Yeah, no, and that's, you know, I think that's the thing with my show being so targeted towards a demographic that, you know, the reality is I'm never going to get a Squarespace or, you know, the ones that we hear all the time to sponsor the show because my numbers are never going to be as big as what they're looking for. So the reality is I need to get sponsors, if I choose to get sponsors, that are very targeted to this particular demographic, you know, mm-hmm. And maybe that's like a ticketing app or something like that. And, you know, maybe it's some kind of coaching software or something. And, you know, the thing is that since some of those things don't tend to be mainstream, I might not actually have a need to use them. And yeah. So since I can't use them, it's going to be hard for me to speak to the level of quality that they actually are and to speak honestly about them. And that's, you know, so that's sort of the dilemma that I run into
yeah.
with sponsors.
Well, and this is, again, something we've talked about at Good Stuff is there's a gap right now. And I think there's a business opportunity here and for somebody to, it's kind of what, if you're familiar with Lex Fridman, he used mm-hmm. to do this, where he's sort of the agent or whatever, go between sponsors and podcasters, finding advertisers and fitting them with podcasts. And he's since gone on to work with the mid-roll, which is, you know, it's kind of like minimum 10,000 or 50,000, whatever the number is, downloads per episode before they'll talk to you kind of idea. But someone in between that who's in the 1,000 to 10,000, and like, because there is going to be brands or products that can, like, they'll pay less, obviously, but they would also love to still get in front of a whole bunch of people, maybe a whole bunch of podcasts that only have 500 downloads, but it's a whole bunch of podcasts that are in that right niche that speaks across the world or across the North America or wherever their target is. And it would just require, I mean, it's a lot of work and not something we're equipped to do good stuff ourselves. And so I think there is something in there anyways that someone could take up, but
yeah, for sure. And you know, and I think another thing is that, like most of us also know that when you listen to shows, you're obviously going to have some people that come just for that particular interview, but your loyal listeners are the people that listen to it also for you, right? They know your personality. They feel like they know you. I mean, I listen to your show and, you know, look at this conversation. You've never talked to me before, but it's like, you know, it's like, I feel like I know you, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the same way with my show. But, you know, one of the things is that having a particular influence among your listeners, obviously, that's a good thing when reading a sponsorship read, but just from like a community perspective, I mean, for me, I've been able to make connections between even some of my guests. I mean, even my interview this morning, which is going to come out on Monday, I mentioned, you know, I'm going to introduce that guest to some other guests that I had in the past that I think it would be a good connection for them to make, you know, so a lot of these people, even though it's a small part of the industry, that some of them still don't know each other. And so you almost become, I hate the word gatekeeper because obviously I'm a big fan of Alexis Ohanian and without their permission, you know, that type of thing. But you know, you kind of become, I don't know what's the right word. Maybe it's one of the Malcolm Gladwell things, but you sort of become like this connector, you know? Yeah. And the thing is maybe a paid community. I've actually been talking directly to some of my guests. I mean, maybe a way for revenue is to actually come up with a paid community. Like, hey, listen, we will do, you know, the show, the interview show, the edited interview show is always going to be free and it's always going to come out every other week. But you know, maybe there's a live stream, with a Q and an unrecorded Q&A afterwards where, you know, like we were talking about earlier, the reality is a lot of these people don't get the opportunity to sit down and have an hour conversation with some of these guests. And it's going to give them an opportunity to get in there and get into the live chat and maybe ask questions and sort of play around and let's let loose a little bit now that we're not recording. Because I'm sure you found this, but for me, a lot of the best content comes when we're not recording.
Yeah.
Or when, I mean, maybe I'm still recording. I haven't actually stopped recording, but yeah. You know what? They're still talking after the show's finished and they sort of loosen up. And
yeah,
it's actually funny. I have an editing story where, and I know that the flow of your show is you get into this a little later with the tools and things, but I use Adobe Audition to record the show. And that's simply because I already have a subscription to Creative Cloud for design. And, I was interviewing my first guest. I just basically hit record and we just went, you know, mm-hmm. And they were like, I went in between and kind of like tried to edit out silences and stuff, but I didn't actually know Adobe Audition at all really at that point. And my second guest was like, you know, could you go back and ask the first four questions again? Because I feel like I'm a lot looser now and, you know, maybe you can just edit them back in. And I, you know, it was like, I don't even know that that's possible. I'm sure it is. Maybe it is, but I don't know how to do that, you know? And so I spent an entire weekend basically going through lynda.com and learning, learning how to use Adobe Audition and learning how to do that. And the whole thing has just been kind of learn as you go. And that's where, you know, talking earlier just about how deep it gets, you know, you can go as deep as you want. And now I remember listening to a show of a guy, who interviewed really good designers and the content was really good. But now I remember listening to the show and he would always interview them in person and it would, you know, weird things would happen. Like, oh, he would drop something or like, you know, background, you know, some background noises are okay. Cause obviously these are not radio shows in the end, they're podcasts. And I think there's a little bit of imperfection that is good about these things.
Yeah, it's good in the medium. Yeah.
But, you know, I remember just these weird gaps of, but it's still recording. It's like, oh, hang on, let me, you know, whatever. You know, maybe we're getting ready or we're having a conversation right now. It's like, hey, hang on, let me go back and, you know, that type of thing. And I remember now listening to these and being like, yeah, I've got to learn to edit.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly it helps a little bit of the polish doesn't hurt. Certainly, and that's where I guess it's always your show gets its own voice, and that you can't figure that out in episode one, and you won't know it. You might have an idea of it until episode two, and maybe by episode 10 you kind of figure it out. Okay, this is how it's going to be. But even then, you know, 40 episodes later, you might, like I did, I changed theme music and changed structure of the show, and we moved to good stuff. And I don't know, was I
right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter, but Yeah, you kind of, I think often, certain types of people always get so caught up with how am I going to deal with the success of my show before they even put out episode one or whatever, and stress every single detail. And like you said at the beginning, I think it's a medium where imperfections are allowed to a point as long as you're improving, I think. And people can sense that and hear that in the show, in the interview style and all that kind of stuff. And in your sponsor reads, like what I'm about to do right now. our sponsor for this episode is someone who's been with Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic from basically the very beginning. Campaign Monitor is who we use to send out our newsletters at goodstuff.fm/newsletters, where you can sign up for our newsletter. And you can visit campaignmonitor.com to check out their service to send out newsletters for your own business, podcast, dog and pony show, whatever you do that might benefit from communicating with your customers, your clients, your readers, your listeners. Campaign Monitor can help you out. You can get set up and going within about 60 seconds with Canvas, their template builder, which you can check out at canvas.cm. They just updated their iOS app called Monitor as well for iOS 8 and iPhone 6, 6 Plus. So you can, wherever you are in the world, as long as you have an internet connection of some sort, you can check on stats and things if you're so driven by that, as I sometimes am to a fault. And you can just be able to communicate really well, not worry about all the responsive devices, designs, all that kind of stuff. They take care of all that for you, opening up in Hotmail and Gmail and Webmail and et cetera mail. All that's taken care of by Campaign Monitor. So you can just worry about the content of your newsletter, the design of it, and get it sent. Our thanks to Campaign Monitor for supporting Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic. Yeah, let's get into some of the discussion of how you record. And you mentioned using Adobe Audition, obviously, for recording, but microphone that you're using and sort of the trail on down, what kind of stuff are you using?
Yeah, so I use a Rode Podcaster, and I actually went through Dan Benjamin's podcasting guide or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And I think it was like the I have it up here. Let's see. Yeah, it was like the, so I was like, okay, entry level, and I was like, you know, I really want to go a little bit higher than entry level. So I went with the intermediate level and got basically most of the stuff. He has like I'm assuming an affiliate link with everything together. So I got the yeah. Rode Podcaster, the boom kit, and then an arm and shock mount. And then later on, I ended up buying a windshield. And as far as headphones, I already had a pair of headphones that work fairly well. It's Audio Technica ATH M30s. Over the full ear headphones, and I just had those from my previous job, just so I could kind of tune out. And then I use Adobe Audition to record, and I've heard some of your previous guests talk about using Adobe Audition, and obviously, in order to record separate tracks, I use Line In and Soundflower.
Oh, you go that route. Okay. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, to be honest. I'm not exactly sure what any of these things do. I just did some tutorials and figured out how to use it.
So
as time progresses, you know, I'm hoping to sit down and learn more and actually get a little deeper and maybe get on your level with some real deal equipment.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I know I've joked on here, I think, before about Soundflower and how it kind of just feels like, I don't know what's going on, but somehow I got it to work. And that's kind of where I was like, okay, I don't feel like I can depend on it yet because I don't know if I can do this again, get it all set up or whatever. But it does work really well for folks who can. And like you said, you've figured it out. So great. And that's, I think, certainly the cheaper alternative to buying a bunch of extra gear that you may or may not ever need use. And so, I would definitely recommend checking it out. There's tons of tutorials out there for it, if you can wrap your head around it, more power to you. And I'm just slow, I guess, that way, and need actual physical things in my world to sometimes. I can't app everything yet, but
yeah. Well, it's you know, it's like I said, I keep defaulting back to it. Just gets deeper and deeper. I actually for up until episode, let me think, pull up my site here. I think it was, I did about 7 or 8 episodes. And then, it was after episode 8, I started having Aaron Dowd actually edits my show now.
Oh, nice.
So I met Aaron. I knew about Aaron just from listening to Sean West, the Sean McCabe, Sean West podcast. And so I had an appreciation for Sean's effort. And he does 2 shows a week. He actually might be somebody that would be interesting for you to talk to.
Yeah.
But he does 2 shows a week, no sponsors, and his whole sell is, you know, if you want to reward me for the quality content that I'm giving you, then join my community. And so I ended up joining his community. I was guilted into joining his community after listening to so many shows and being called a freeloader. So I joined his community, and I also, you know, I wanted to see like what's behind the scene here, you know, like what's really back here. And it's been great, you know, and that's, I actually met Aaron in that community, because he was obviously one of Sean's co-hosts for the first few episodes, and we chatted, and he just, you know, he's a really busy guy, obviously, and sort of is choosy with his shows, and he edited, 2 of my shows, and I at the time I thought that I liked editing, and it was like, you know, we'll try 2, you know,
yeah,
and we'll see how it goes. And my whole thing is, because this is a side project and because I need to be creatively fulfilled in some way with this, you know, part of the editing is part of the storytelling, you know, and it was like, if I miss that, then I'm going to go back and do it again. But the problem is that I was doing this a lot of times on the weekends, taking forever because I didn't exactly know what I was doing. I've gotten a lot, obviously a lot better at it now, But I was taking time away from my family. You know, I got two kids and a wife, and you know, with the regular work week, doing the freelance schedule, which a lot of times can be crazy. It was like, how much is my time worth? You know, mm-hmm. like, yeah, it's not making any money right now as far as directly. Now there's been a lot of connections I've been able to make from like the freelance side. But, you know, it's like, if we think about paying for, I don't know, like my cable bill or something, it's like, oh, that's like X amount of dollars a month. And you know, sort of when I told my wife, I was like, well, this is how much it's going to cost to have the show edited. And she was like, well, that's, you know, that's like X amount of dollars a month, considering you're putting out two shows,
right?
you know, a month. And I was like, yeah, but here's the thing though. It takes me like 6 hours on the weekends. So it's like, how much is my time worth? Is it worth me paying for somebody to do this to have that 6 hours back? You know, especially at a crucial time. My kids are 5 and 3.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. So, you know, it's like and here we go, kind of going back to the whole parental conversation that seems to be a theme on your show.
Yeah, well, I have 7, 4, and 2, so it's okay. It's hard. My 7-year-old, I don't know if you heard him, he came in, he's homesick today, not really sick, but just sick enough that he didn't go to school, so he might pop in again here again just because he's needing stuff to do, but
yeah. But I, you know, I made the decision to have Aaron do it, and it's allowed me to focus on other things, like planning well ahead out and getting my guests and writing more in-depth show notes, which that's I do try to write a few paragraphs for my show notes, and then also try to include, if you listen to the show on the actual episode page, I'll put actual photographs of the people's work, which I clear with them obviously to get, be able to put that up on the site. You know, just to kind of give it a little, it's not a lot, you know, but it's a little something extra to kind of encourage you to go there and listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I think for folks who, like, obviously, you know, if you try podcasting first before you worry about whether you're going to hire an editor, but I think that's something where people underestimate maybe, or like you said, think that they love that part of it, but really once they give it up to someone else, recognize that their passion is actually just, you know, in doing the podcast or creating the website for the podcast and doing the podcast or something, some vector or whatever of those things, but doesn't necessarily mean you have to love every aspect of that. And for those like yourself and myself who freelance and run their own business, maybe, and you know that you can make X dollars per hour if you're doing client work rather than spending, like you said, 6 hours editing,
right?
And Aaron can do it in an hour or whatever he does, you know, and charge you for that, obviously. But the trade-off is you get time with your kids or you get time to work on other stuff where you're making money. It's, you know, it's important to sort of look at those factors and not just hang on to this. There's no, like, I mean, the Leo Laportes, the Dan Benjamins, the whoever you look up to, they're not editing podcasts anymore. They've hired that out. And that's one way that they've been able to get to that level of success, is because they've handed some of that off. And not that you shouldn't do it right from episode one, because it does cost money, obviously.
Right.
But it can be well worth it. And going back to what we originally started with, the scheduling thing and keeping up, like, if you can't keep up the consistent schedule that you set out to do, that's one way to help sort of get that done. Because Aaron, I know, is, from all accounts I've heard anyways, is very good at getting the thing back to you when he says he's going to, and doing a good job of it, obviously. And that will hopefully help you. Because I know for me, often we'll finish the show, you know, my kid will come in or an email will come in, I'll get distracted. And then I think about having to go back and edit afterwards. Unless I do it right away, thinking about going back to it later, that's like drudgery then to me. And I'll just kind of like distract myself with anything but going back and finishing editing, which for this show doesn't take me a long time.
Through,
oh, exactly. You know? Yeah. It has to be one task all the way done. If I leave it for a day, then it'll might as well be a week because it won't happen. But
yeah.
Exactly. So I forget where I was now. We're going on tangents, which is good. But the gear and you, yeah, I think we were sort of talked through all that. You hand off the editing to Aaron. You're using, I'm guessing maybe WordPress?
No, actually, that's Drupal. So
oh, okay.
I came from a Drupal shop. And so what I did was, like, I left my job and I freelanced full time for 6 years, took a job as a creative director at a local web shop. After about a year of that, realized that I'm just not cut out to work for other people and decided to go back out as a freelancer again, which I love, you know, and I had a month where I went home, you know, after leaving that position and decided I'm not going to do any client work for this month and I'm just going to knock this stuff out. And so I designed the entire website, obviously in Photoshop, and handed it off to a pal of mine who's a Drupal developer. And he sort of, you know, I'm not a developer at all. So he obviously, people have their own affinity to certain CMSs and things like that. And I was like thinking, well, we'll just do this thing in WordPress, right? And he convinced me to do Drupal. And I was like, all right, whatever, that's fine. As long as it gets done. Like that's, you know.
Yeah.
So designed it and had a friend, you know, develop it for me. And then here we are today. So
no, it looks good. And
it's not responsive yet. That's my next task.
Oh, yeah. I did actually do the web designer thing of just quickly checking it, and I was like, "Oh no!"
That's brutal. That has to change like immediately.
I know, but again, that's one of those things where like the podcast is the thing, and that's like priority number one. Obviously, having a nice site will help people be interested and stick around or check it out, and all that. That's all dressing, I think, but the podcast has got to be number one. So.
Well, and it's like MVP, right? Minimum viable product, get it up.
Yeah.
Of course, I spent a ton of time designing every single page of the website.
And that's, I mean, obviously your background is there, so that's, you're going to sweat that kind of stuff. But how about your decision to use, like you're obviously in iTunes, all that kind of stuff, but you're also posting it to SoundCloud as well. Are you using that as a primary sort of posting site and then sending that to iTunes, or are you doing your own? Is SoundCloud sort of a secondary place to post the stuff and use their embedded player?
Yeah, that's my primary. I, you know, was doing a little research, and then I put out like, I can't remember if I actually put out in the little 13-minute intro show or not already, but I applied to be a part of SoundCloud's podcasting program.
Right.
And I saw that, you know, I was like, Mule Radio uses SoundCloud. So if it's good enough for them, then it's definitely going to be good enough for me. So that's really, honestly, that was it. I mean, I was like, they use it, I'm going to use it. And so, obviously, you know, I have to pay since I'm putting out, you know, two episodes a month, I have to pay for the extra, you know, one of the pro level plans. But I'm starting to really like how it's, sort of becoming, I think maybe somebody mentioned this on one of your previous shows, but like it's like a YouTube of audio. Mm. You know, you can share things, and then your show itself has its own personality. And so I throw it up there, and obviously that updates the RSS into iTunes, and then I'll just grab the link and embed it into my site.
Yeah, nice. And so it's just hosted there, nothing, nowhere else, whatever. Which is, I think that's a great way, again, speaking of getting going quickly and easily, way easier than fiddling with, whether it doesn't matter whether it's WordPress, then there's plenty of great ways to do it and easy ways to do it in the end with something like WordPress or Drupal or whatever, with players and plugins and stuff. But as far as just like getting episode one out the door, using SoundCloud as your base, and even I think, don't quote me on this because I haven't played with it in a while, but worst case is you could use SoundCloud for your player and then still embed the MP3 in your post somewhere send that through WordPress or whatever your CMS of choice to iTunes and things like that. But yeah, like the player is great. They give you built-in stats. I think it's only like $10 a month for the pro.
Yeah,
isn't
it's,
it?
It's or something like that. I want to say I paid somewhere between like $150 to $200 for the year.
Yeah.
I usually, when things work like that, I usually just fork it up front, 'cause you get like a little bit of discount a lot of times. I think, and this is just to encourage, if anybody wants to start a podcast, I mean, I put up the first episode on SoundCloud. I don't even have a website yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like, that's the thing. Just do it, get it up there. But I do like how it allows your show to have its own personality. Like, I haven't necessarily done it yet because there's like a weird OCD thing with me in my stream. Like, it has to be just Makers of Sport episodes. But, you know, theoretically, I could share episodes of things that I like, you know, in there. Like, it has its own personality.
You know?
So if I find an interview show that I like or whatever, I could share it.
Yeah.
And actually, a guy named Michael Wolf, I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he is a tech writer. And he has a podcast called Next Market Podcast, and he's a big SoundCloud guy. But his show he does a lot of market research, and specifically in the tech world, like wearable technology and home related technology and things like that, and interviews some podcasters, but he started a little website, just like a little podcast collective called technology.fm. And I actually ended up, he posts my show there, which is, it's not like a necessarily a network or anything like you guys or Dan is doing, but you know, it's just kind of a way of some of these smaller boutique shows, maybe with the exception of A16Z podcast, which is Andreessen Horowitz.
Right.
Those guys don't need much help.
Yeah, they're doing okay. But yeah, that's neat. So it's kind of just like a collective, and you still have your own show and platform, obviously, site and all that kind of stuff, but it's just another place to reach.
Yeah. And you know, and that's the thing. I think that, you know, in this sort of shareable web today, you know, what's the goal here for us as podcasters? Is it to have as many people share our show, in ways that are easy so that people can listen to it? Because if he's just embedding my SoundCloud, you know, thing, then it's going to be no different than if somebody listened to it on my site anyway.
Yeah,
you know, because exactly. I mean, the whole traffic thing, it's, I'm not selling ads on my website. So really traffic, I guess, doesn't mean a ton as far as people directly going there.
Yeah. You want listeners, and that's, I mean, he's using your, from your account or whatever, your SoundCloud embed. And so your, someone clicks play there, it's the same as there as if I posted on my own personal blog or, you know, any, the nice thing actually with SoundCloud now going forward is their Twitter is using them as a sort of beta or whatever, for embeddable MP3s on Twitter cards and stuff. And I don't think it's available for all accounts yet, but that's something that'll be coming first or sooner to SoundCloud anyways than everybody else. And that's a market sort of a niche or whatever, a thing that's going to blow up here a bit, is smaller bite-sized podcasts that can just be a tweet basically and embedded in a tweet or whatever. And kind of scares me from a like production and, like, you do all this work maybe just to release something that's only 4 minutes long or whatever, which, I mean, I do my dailyish show, but I don't put a lot of work into it. But yeah, it's a neat avenue anyways. Exciting things, I think, happening. And I, for one, anyways, as a podcaster and as a podcast network owner, I'm not scared of that kind of stuff. It's just all interesting, and we'll sort of roll with it and see where it goes. But
yeah, I think that we are, you know, and obviously we run in these circles, so we read a lot of these articles, but I really do believe, even somebody that's new to podcasting, having done this since March of this year, I think that we really are in a golden age. Like, it's about to really hit, you know, and I think that it's going to be good for all of us. The only thing is it's, like you said, it's probably going to create a lot more work for us.
Yeah.
In the long run. But, you know, being able to share these things and even little things like, you know, iOS, including the podcast app installed by default.
Yeah.
You know, with the mainstream audience still doesn't know, you know, I can't really walk down the street and talk to somebody and say, you know, what do you do? It's like, well, I have a podcast, and the majority of people still don't know what that is, even though we think that they probably do, but we tend to run in these tech circles, you know?
Yeah. Totally, yeah. That's what I've used. I think I've mentioned it before, too. I use the metric of, like, once my mom comes and tells me about a new podcast she's listened to, or my dad, it doesn't, not gender, but just my mom and dad, their generation, or my sisters, too, are similar, where they've listened to occasionally to some of my stuff and then get mad at me for something I said about them, maybe, but they they don't, like, go seek out a podcast to listen to and then tell other people about it. Like, that's, like, if I see my sisters or somebody, sort of a normal person, quote unquote, whatever that means, but posting about a podcast episode, mine or otherwise, on their Facebook page or something, that's when I know things have jumped a bit. And, you know, we're going to see a bigger influx, because up to now, they might listen to the odd show linked to something from somewhere, but not recognize that it's a thing they could subscribe to and become a regular listener of, or any of those kinds of things. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the beautiful thing is when we get to the point where you can directly grab, and maybe this is I don't think this is the SoundCloud thing that you're referring to, but, you know, let's say I'm listening to a show and I always pull out these really good quotes, what I feel like are the best quotes, and just post them in the show notes. But let's say there's a way to easily grab that information and tweet it, you know?
Yeah.
That would be insane.
That's where, I know, like, it requires, right now, it requires a ton of work for you, the podcast producer, to, like you said, you sometimes put quotes in, and I've done that too on some of the shows where, but it's just more time and takes, you could make a tweetable quote or whatever and make a tweet button or whatever for your show. And And then probably for a lot of us, you do that, and then you see, you know, one of those out of 100 that you do gets actually clicked on, and then it's like, well, that's a lot of work for right, to make it right. for one person. But yeah, so there's another something there to be solved yet, anyways. And that's what I don't know if you listen to the Startup Podcast.
Yeah,
his thing, and
$6,000 for episode, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing everybody heard that listens, that does podcasts.
I know. And then his like $100,000 value, or I forget what the value, $10 million valuation, but $100,000 investment from somebody. I mentioned that to a friend, was just like, and he had, like, at the time he hadn't recorded episode one yet of this thing. I was like, that's where you got to recognize he's got a bit of privilege or history that he brings. So that it's not just like you and I going to our dad or mom or whatever and saying, hey, I'm going to podcast now, so you want to invest in this?
Right. Well, but, you know, and it's funny, I listened to you had Justin Jackson on, right, a while back. I'm sort of
can't stand that guy. No, I'm just kidding.
Fellow Canadian, right? Yeah. That was the Celebrate Canada episode. No, but he I saw him post something on Twitter maybe a week or so ago, and it was like there was somebody, one of the big, you know, news sites wrote an article about podcasting, and it was like, yeah, you know, startup podcast, and
yeah,
you know, all power to that guy. I mean, he's killing it. But the thing is it's not the reality. You know, there's a lot of us that are way back here grinding it out. You know, and even like the 5x5s, you know, nothing was mentioned in that episode. You know, it was just like, oh, NPR, and you know,
yeah,
it's kind of cheating, you know.
Yeah, in a little sense, bit. Yeah. And I don't think you're doing this either. There's no sour grapes, I don't think, for what he's doing and he's accomplished. It's great, but it also kind of paints everybody as if this is where we haven't been doing this for a while. And I remember 4 or 5 years ago, there was a similar thing that happened when, I don't remember if it was Leo Laporte or somebody, you know, he built a new studio. And so then it gets a bit of press and it's like, oh, podcasting is on the cusp of this big revival or whatever. And it just kind of dies down and everyone keeps slugging along and making their $100 a month in sponsorships or whatever they might get. And, it feels like it's perpetually, it's kind of like the old saying of this is the year of Linux on the desktop, or this is the year that video is going to take off on the internet, and this is the year that podcasting is going to take off. And it just, you know, it's just slow, and there's little blips and, you know, huge spikes on something, but then it kind of falls back down to normal and a little bit higher than it was before, but
keep going. And you know, the thing about that show, and I love that show, Startup Podcast, I mean, I think it's very creative, you know, with the way that it's just transparent and that type of thing. But, you know, so nothing, like you said, I mean, not to paint that in a bad light at all, that's great. And I love the fact that we have this very talented mainstream, you know, radio personality pursuing podcasting like that. That's good for all of us. But also I think that, you know, many of us need to keep in perspective too, that the reality is not many people are going to get $6,000 an episode for sponsorship.
Yeah.
or, you know, and even from a sponsorship perspective, like now that the, you know, I don't know if it was the New York Times or whatever posted this, but
it was a Fast Company article, I think.
So, you know, even brands, marketing directors at brands that read that article and think, oh, now sponsoring podcasts is going to get me, you know, all this stuff. I think there's a lot of benefit in it, but you know, on that side as well, you know, you got to kind of keep a level head, I guess, to know that,
yeah,
if just because you sponsor a show, you're not going to get the results that maybe Alex Bloomberg got.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I know, something as we talk with sponsors, is you kind of get a bit of both. Like we hear, or potential sponsors, is either they're so undervaluing the value of podcasting and sponsorship, and, you know, me talking directly into someone's ear about their brand or product, or they've got such unrealistic expectations. The other extreme of, I'm going to, because we have 1,000 listeners of this episode, let's say 900 of them are going to sign up for my service after episode one or whatever that I sponsor. And we just have to educate and do that's, again, going back to what I was saying with a sponsorship business, some mediator in between who just can do a really great job of explaining all the nuances of podcasting, both the benefits and the negatives, and where you have to be careful, because it doesn't do any of us any good to oversell the idea and charge a whole bunch of money to somebody. And then a business just gets burned on one podcaster who, you know, oversells, overvalues his podcast, and then they don't ever want to do it again because they didn't see anything from it anywhere near what they put into it. But
right,
anyways, that's probably a discussion for another show.
That's an entire show right there, a whole series.
Yeah. It's interesting. That show has made me think about, as we do good stuff here, there's a bunch of us behind the scenes doing it. And the idea of like being that transparent about what's going on is tough, because we have discussions and arguments and debates about how to do things. And I'm sure there'll be interest in some of that to listeners, but at the same time, to do that, knowing you're going to be putting this out in the world, it would be, I don't know. It's an interesting way of being that transparent and open, I guess. And I don't know if I could do it or not, but it'd be a good experiment. So, before we wrap up, you've mentioned a few. What are some of the podcasts that you listen to? You mentioned, like, I don't know if you're listening to them, but that technology.fm site, startup.com is Alex Bloomberg's podcast. What are some of the other shows?
Yeah, so I right now I'm looking in. I use Instacast to listen to my podcast, and so I like having the ability to sort of sleep shows, I guess.
Oh yeah.
Without having to unsubscribe, because I might, maybe something just stops or whatever, and you don't have any more episodes, and I can sort of substitute that one in. But the shows that I never miss an episode of are Sean West. That's the Sean West podcast, SEANWES. And I listen to Product People with Justin Jackson. I listen to The Dirt, which is a show about UX, fresh tilled soil, which you had them on here, right?
Yeah, that was when Kyle Roddick stepped in for a bit for me and chatted with him. Yeah.
So I also listen to your show, which I just discovered your show a couple months back. So I, because of the OCD in me, I if I like a podcast, I have to listen to every single episode. So for nice. You, I am on
that's funny. Yeah,
45. Okay. A few back, but I'll get there.
That's a little bit, I don't even know if I could go, I should go back and listen just so I could hear how things have changed, but, I can't listen to the podcast. Like if my show is on and my wife's listening to something, she doesn't listen to this one, but other shows that I do or whatever, I always have to make her turn it off, 'cause I just can't stand listening to myself beyond the actual editing, obviously. But anyway.
Yeah. Also listen to the Businessology show with Dan Mall. That's a pretty good one as far as like the business side of design. I listen to Mac Power Users, but I don't listen to every single episode. So I sort of pick and choose on that one, which ones I want to, cause for me, it's really hard to listen to a show that's like 2 hours long. I mean, if something goes that long for me, it's tough. You know?
Last night's,
I think everybody, yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say the latest episode of the talk show, which I usually listen to most of them. That's the John Gruber Daring Fireball podcast. But right. I realized I was sitting here last night and doing some work and like, the latest episode with John Siracusa talking about his OS 10 review. It's like 3 hours long. And I hadn't realized it was because I listened to it sort of broken up throughout the day and throughout a couple of days, I think. But it's like, holy crap, that's a long.
Yeah.
That breaks every rule of podcasting.
Yeah, that's tough. That's why I have a hard time. I mean, I do listen to him every once in a while, but he's not one of the ones that I'm listening to every single time. But same with, I do listen to Grit, every episode of Grit, formerly Quit.
Oh, yeah.
And as far as something that's maybe not, recently I've been listening to NYRD Radio, which is Alexis Ohanian's new show. He's only got 3 episodes, so that's a pretty good one. Invisible Office Hours, that's Paul Jarvis and Jason Surfer App, which they're kind of doing the seasonal thing. So they got 12 episodes, and they're going to take a break and come back for more later. Let's see. I'm trying to think of the ones that I literally do not miss an episode of. Dorm Room Tycoon is a good one that I listen to. A guy named William Channer. He's got 101 episodes, and that one sort of floats between entrepreneurship, design, tech, and advertising. His interviews usually tend to be about 30 minutes or less, which I like that.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of go in real quick. As far as outside of tech, I listen to a couple of sports shows, ESPN, some things from ESPN, Jalen and Jacoby, which is, those guys sort of come from the whole Grantland world. Jalen Rose is a former NBA basketball player. And, I listen to a show called Relevant Podcast, which is, a magazine. It started off as a magazine about sort of like, religion, culture, and kind of creativity, and it's about a 1.5 hour show, and they'll have like guests on like mainstream musicians and actors and things like that. It's pretty good. It's funny. They have some funny people on there. Nice. So my wife and I listen to that one together. That's the only podcast that my wife actually listens to. The rest, I'm just like, I've constantly got things on. I'm just trying out stuff, and you know how it is.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's a good list of stuff for shows for people to check out if they're looking for something new and different. Where can folks find you on the internet these days?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at T Adam Martin. So you can talk to me there, and then also tadammartin.com. And then my show is at Makers of Sport on Twitter, and then makersofsport.com.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks, Adam, for coming on. And my son has come in, so I guess I have to go figure out something for him to do here.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. And for folks who are listening to this episode, if you're brand new to Show Me Your Mic, like Adam said, you can go back and listen to the archives. This is episode 56 of the show, which you can find at goodstuff.fm/SMYM. I'm iChris on Twitter. Show Me Your Mic's Twitter account is SMYM_FM. You can hit me up at chris@goodstuff.fm if you have a comment or a suggestion for a future episode guest. And there's also if you're a podcaster who would like to just book an appearance on the show, like I've said before, you know, whatever, 5 to 10 episodes in, something somewhere around that number. I use 10 as a kind of round number, but you want to come on and talk about your show, goodstuff.appointlet.com. I'll put a link in the show notes at the bottom of the page to that, but that's where you can actually just book right in, and saves us both a bunch of time getting scheduled and sorted and all that kind of stuff. I think that's where, Adam, you booked there as well. Yeah, like you said, I'm not booked as far as you are into February or whatever, like you said. That's awesome, but it's that service alone, I think, has saved my ability to be on a consistent schedule, because I would, speaking of putting things off to other people, I would put off booking people just because it felt like it took forever, and so back and forth. But that service has saved my bacon there for sure. And they're not a sponsor, but indirectly they actually are, I guess, and you can check them out at appointlet.com for stuff you might want to use them for as well. I think that's it for this episode. Back next week with a guest who is Jared Ringgold. We will be talking with him. So thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye.